Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Orthodox Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson. I have returned from Shelbyville, Tennessee, with my eyesight completely intact, which is very good news. It was quite unremarkable, actually. The police there had it firmly in hand, and there was no real difficulty. It was a very involved police operation. And it needs to be made clear that the left is the exclusive reason for this. The right in these things has never and will never engage in acts of violence. There's been plenty of violence and retaliation. But ever since the Greensboro shootout in 1979, the regime has been financing these leftist organizations to take violent action. They're essentially NGOs. And when you're trying to trace their origin, where they get their money from, it's really very incestuous. They are laundering their money from one organization to another. Foundations give to other foundations. Suffice it to say that all of these groups have elite financing. All of these groups ultimately come from your big foundations, Ford, Rockefeller, George Soros, and of course, corporate bodies. Corporate America, this is so very, very, very easy to show. Just go to pick any corporation and go to their philanthropic foundation and see where the money goes. Or go to a group like the Homosexual Rights, the Human Rights Campaign, for example, and go to their corporate sponsorship, and you'll see everybody on there. That means that the left is a corporate establishment set of institutions. You had two helicopters of this thing, two drones, 200 policemen at least, heavily armed, exclusively because the communists can't handle what we have to say. They have failed in any debate or discussion, and therefore they resort to force. They resort to using the law, university policy. Because when they debate, whether verbally or in writing, they have a tendency to lose. And they join these groups, especially whites, join these groups for the sake of conformity. And I think most of all, they want to make believe that they're making a difference, that they're part of some crusade, but without one that causes any sacrifice. True rebels are usually in prison or dead or on the margins of society, like me. They're not celebrated on the front cover of Time. They're not given millions of dollars. The very definition of a rebel is someone who has been shoved to the margins of society. But that's the nature of our situation. And because of the Shelbyville event and everything that's been going on in Europe, I want to talk about the Orthodox Church and race. The first thing I need to say is that the concept of race is a problematic one. It's a scientific genetic concept of very recent origin. DNA was only discovered after World War II. In the ancient world, race and ethnicity were usually one and the same thing and were never separated from everything else, like the faith, adherence to law, family life, the underlying culture in general. It was taken for granted. No one in the ancient world, in the medieval world, in the modern world up until the last century, ever advocated that the races of the world should mix, that the races of the world should become one brown, cultureless, almost languageless, zombified mass. This is exactly what the regime wants. Matthew Heinbeck gave his speech to these people, as always trying to convert them, saying that you know that there is no sacrifice to your cause. You know that that's because you serve the corporate order. They want open borders. They don't want any kind of union organization. They don't want any kind of rebellion, but rebellion can only occur when you have an identity. Once that identity is destroyed, you are ruled absolutely. Without an identity, you have to fight back. Identity cannot be some subjectively held set of values that changes all the time. It has to be far more fundamental than that. Where do the values come from? And they'll come from nation, ethnicity, and language. So it's confusing when we try to use modern terminology and read it back, whether into the ancient world, Hebraic world, or the Greek world. The Greeks had a strong sense of race, but it wasn't a scientific conception. Certainly it had a genetic component, because they had figured out at some point that, you know, two white people make a white baby. Their science and their medical science certainly was at least as advanced as ours. Their lifespan was as long as ours. Their diet was better than ours. They were not insanely obese. They were not sucking down chemicals and stuffing themselves. Their life was far more rational and in every sense. And they were healthier. But to separate one aspect of human life from another is only the function of the American universities. There is no real distinction between history, economics, and philosophy, theology, and science. They're all the same thing, seen from different points of view. Religious mixing, of course, has been condemned by the church since the dawn of the Old Testament and the New Testament. I would never, ever, as a priest, marry a couple where one is not Orthodox. But as a matter of cultural survival, I probably wouldn't marry a mixed couple either, racially speaking. There may be some exceptions for an Asian. East Asians can be have high IQs. Their people are quite capable of greatness and have an ancient civilization. I would have to be talked into that. But you know more than anything else that the Asian's parents would be upset, because it's only white people who are told to not see race. Non-whites, that's all they see is race. But that's been the history of the world. And you don't see lots of treatises on nationalism in the ancient world, because it was simply was taken for granted. You don't see treatises on why the family's so great either, for the same reason. In Europe, we see the direct invasion, organized and mobilized by the European Union, by every major corporation you could think of, to destroy the foundations for revolt, and that would be nation. It's not just about cheap labor. Some of you may have heard that the French Minister of Investment, the Finance Minister, not too long ago said we need to slash wages so that French companies can hire more migrants. We know that most of urban Sweden has been taken over by Islamic mafia gangs. Three Swedish policemen a day are resigning because they are told not to enforce the law. And you have the spectacle of feminists saying that rape is okay so long as the person doing it is non-white. This is the insanity that we're dealing with. The elites of Europe, against every bone in their body, are bringing in hostile foreigners, and they're being mobilized as hostile foreigners, including going to North Africa and the rest of it to find migrants. Almost 70% of these migrants are males. And yet the propaganda shows women and children and families crying and things like this. We know that they are mostly males of military age. And this is an invasion. At no other time in global history has a group of people slated its own destruction. The ruling class, I don't care how many gated communities they have, still has to live in the world. They still have to travel. Still have to go to airports. They know that they can be targeted. where the brainwashing has gotten that bad, and the punishments, especially social ostracism, for fighting for common sense here, is so severe that people don't want to be seen as crazy. Name calling, racist, and Nazi. Well, to me, that's not, you know, thank you, not a problem. Although I'm not German, so Nazi wouldn't make any sense. But you know, your response really should be, well, so what? Is it true or is it false? You are defending the invasion of a civilization you don't understand. You know nothing of the history. And since you don't know anything about the civilization of European peoples, whether East or West, you don't see its destruction as anything problematic. We may be at a point where Europe cannot be saved. And that's your own fault. Having to do some research for this, and I've been avoiding it. The 5 million so-called migrants, these are invaders, mobilized by the left, by the European Union, since 2008. There is no connection. How many wars have there been in the Middle East? How many wars have there been in North Africa? Has there ever been a time where this massive invasion has taken place as a result? Why is it just now? What's happening is that major media and police departments, I'm not talking about cops, I'm talking about their bosses, are allowing the society to be destroyed, women to be raped, the economy to be completely hollowed out for the sake of this ludicrous and insane agenda. According to the Stockholm Police Department, 55 exclusion zones exist, not just in Stockholm, but in all Swedish cities. But there are 55 specifically around the capital. These are no-go areas that are completely self-governed by migrant savages. They have a full organized crime sort of mafia network. They even have their own courts. The regime has the audacity to say that the rape rate has fallen between 2015 and 2016. Well, that's because these migrant camps have taken over whole areas of the country, and there is no way to report crime there. They know this, of course. Overall, you have a 65% jump in violent crime from 2012 to 2015. 50% of that is sexual. 1975, capitalism said Scandinavia is going to be multicultural. They needed to lower wages. And so they began changing the immigration laws like the U.S. had done in 1965. Since that time, there's been a 500% increase in crime and a 2,000% increase in crime of a sexual nature. Newspapers are refusing to report this. They're using phrases like southern man, a man with dark white skin, a Mediterranean man, or a man with Mediterranean. These are the words that they're using when they're describing a rapist. And the word rapist now has been, especially in Germany, has been replaced with misunderstanding. In 1975, a foreigner was roughly two times as likely to rape a Swedish girl as a native, actual white Swede. 2005, they were over 30 times more likely. Sexual crimes are extremely important because it's the assault on the women that they get away with that is a sign of domination. I will say this again, one of my big arguments against interracial dating, that is to say, the most common, the black male and the white female, is predatory. It is a victory over the white man. These guys are being raised to hate white people. The only factor they see in anything is race. I have many black friends from high school and college, and even the good ones, even the ones that I know and I've known for a long time, everything is racial. This is how they're born and raised. Because we're all friends, you get to make fun of them for that, but there's a serious undertone. This is why the sexual crimes have gone through the roof. All crimes have increased massively, exclusively due to the rise in migrations, because these enforced immigrants not only are being directed into the country, but also are being mobilized to destroy it. In 1975, there were 421 rapes in Sweden. In 2014, there were 6,620. Sweden is the rape capital of the developed world, with 70 per 100,000. That's from the United Nations Office of Drugs and Crime. You may have heard this argument, this fool from, I believe it was the old New York Post, can't think of his name, just a few years ago, he made the argument that the reason you have this spike in crime, especially sexual crime, is because Sweden has revised and redefined the word rape to such an extent that pretty much any sexual touching that is vaguely unwanted is called rape. I had to read that three times. He said that, well, the Green Party had proposed this. Well, it never passed, of course. But the regime is saying that this is law. And that's why there's this massive increase in rapes. Because anything is considered rape. Well, I didn't hear about this. It's because it didn't happen. The country would be a laughingstock if you know, looking at a woman is considered rape. The Swedish rape law, and it's a penal code, chapter 6, section 6, chapter 1, is what you would expect. Forcible sexual intercourse. Now, why are these guys lying like this? Why would they make up something so absurd that, oh, you have this, you know, 1,000% increase in rapes over the last few years because in 2005, a political party advocated loosening the definition of the word rape. And he knows as he's writing this that this is nonsense, that this is garbage. This is the fundamental issue here. Because the elite form one body with one agenda. In the Swedish as well as the German press, they'll simply lie and say, Swedish men rape a woman at the train station. They will say Swedes. Well, they live in Sweden, therefore they're Swedes. The gang violence in Stockholm is non-Swedish. The SNS Economic Council was the one I mentioned before. In France, Germany, and Sweden, that is talking about slashing wages, driving wages down, and destroying all unions just so you can hire more migrants. That'll solve the problem. This is quite convenient. Thousands have been evicted to make room for these criminals. Swedish government is talking about new megacities that they're going to build and finance for these people. But what is the concern? Why is it so important that they're here? And why is it so important that they're willing to cover up and lie for mass rape, including that of children? About 40% are children. Again, this is a matter of predatory domination. It's not an accident that the word booty refers to a woman as well as that which you could take after an invasion. In fact, the medical council even said 10% of these doctors, they actually have doctors coming over, only 10% actually know anything about medicine. 80% of the Stockholm police force has stated that they want out. And it's because they're not allowed to enforce the law. The Oslo Police Department, as many of you have read, have stated quite clearly that they have lost the city. It's very, very depressing. It's hard for me to even read this stuff. The European man, especially after the defeat of the Third Reich, and this is really the start of everything, that was the last gasp. The nationalist governments, whether it be in Germany or Romania or anywhere else, organized to fight the Soviet Union and the banks, were the last gasp of European manhood. People are losing jobs and being destroyed for pointing out that the immigration policies of the European Union and local governments are leading to the slaughter of people. Slaughter of whites, slaughter of women specifically, and the sexual crimes that come along with this invasion. The very fact that sexual crimes are so prominent here is that taking the woman from an occupied area is the sign of victory, especially in the third world. So as this goes on, as there is a directed invasion, there's a directed invasion in the U.S. from Latin America, there's a directed invasion of Europe coming from Africa and the Middle East. These are mobilized and organized, and they are protected. That's easy enough to show. We know why this is the case. It is to destroy any corporate identity of European peoples. It's to drive wages to the lowest possible level, to destroy any foundation for unionization, for fighting back, anything at all, and of course to destroy Christianity. Jewish organizations, to a man, support this migrant invasion, and especially the Islamic invasion of Europe. The purpose is to maybe strike the death blow to the only reason that Judaism exists today, and that is to destroy Christianity. Now, race mixing in and of itself, by itself, separated from everything else, is not a sin. It is not. It's not a theological issue. It's stupid. It might even be criminal. However, lying to cover up black crime in America, where almost all violent crime in cities is non-white, almost 100%. That's a simple fact of life. The gangs in Southern California are almost entirely Hispanic, black, or illegal immigrants from Hispanic country. That is a sin. Accepting this, promoting this, is a sin. It's a deadly sin. Because if you have any position of power and you support this, you are responsible for what happens. See, empowerment means responsibility. So anyone advocating this in the Orthodox Church cannot receive communion, cannot have anything to do with the Church, because they're involved in the destruction of Christendom. They're involved in the destruction and the murder and the rape of whole families, not to mention the economy. Also, they can get a pat on the back from the regime. Of course, Christianity is racial, because everything is racial. Of course it is. It wasn't even an issue. So as this gets worse, and white people are being slaughtered en masse, it may become a deadly sin to mix racially, especially if it reaches the point of near obliteration, which of course is the purpose here. To the extent that the white genotype is bred out of existence, at that point, it would be sinful. You're talking about a murder of an entire group of people. Vice President Joe Biden, not too long ago, when he under Obama, he says, unrelenting stream of immigration, nonstop, he said. Folks like me who are white, the first time in 2017 will be an absolute minority in the USA. And he was wrong about the year, but absolute minority, fewer than 50% of the people in America. From then on, we'll be white European stock. It's not a bad thing. It's a source of strength. That's what Joe Biden said just a few years ago. He was he wanted to increase immigration to America so that by 2017, white should be a minority. The head of the Green Party in the EU Parliament said, we, the Greens, have to make sure to get as many immigrants as possible into Germany. And there in Germany, we must fight for the right to vote. When we reach that, we'll have our share of the vote. We need to change this republic. In other words, we need to import voters from the third world, position ourselves as their advocate, and then herd them to the polls. Thaddeus Stevens, after the Civil War, the Green Party and the EU. This is their route to power. After Trump was elected, you heard the hysterical screaming, we need more immigrants so we can outvote white people in the next election. The former Prime Minister of Australia, back in 1971, he said, I think if we build up gradually inside Australia a proportion of people without white skin, then there'll be a complete lack of consciousness that it's being built up. Then we'll arrive at a state where we'll have a multiracial country without racial tension, maybe the first in the world. There you have, many years ago, an admission from the Prime Minister of Australia that bringing in more non-whites will destroy the ethnic and racial consciousness of those living here. The former Supreme Commander of NATO, the execrable mercenary, General Wesley Clark, stated, "Let's not forget what the origin of the problem is. There is no place in modern Europe for ethnically pure states. That's a 19th century idea we are trying to transition into the 21st century, and we'll do it with multi-ethnic states." Now, you know, we could multiply thousands of these comments. And it means that race mixing, the destruction of the white race, and the destruction of the ethnicities that make it up, is the official agenda of the regime, of the ruling class. That means those who are promoting it are stooges of the ruling class. So Antifa, these communist goons, that is the proof positive, without doubt, with pure logical certainty, that you are a tool of the capitalist ruling class. They want open borders, so do you. You are nothing more than strikebreakers. Mass immigration is a sin because it is aimed at the physical destruction and replacement of a group of people. If you preach self-hate on a racial basis, that's also sinful. Now, if a reader requires an explanation for that, you need to be put into a sanitarium. Now, after decades of feeding these non-whites with this anti-white hatred, what do you think will happen when white people are a minority in any part of Europe or the U.S.? The U.N. defines genocide this way, among other things. In part of the definition, it says, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. Therefore, according to the UN, the explicitly stated racial immigration policy of political elites in the Western world count as genocidal. That is a deadly sin without question. And it's been done many times before. Stalin forced Russians to move to Ukraine to Russify the area. He did it in the Baltics. He did it in Poland. All with the same purpose. The Communist Party of China sends thousands of Han Chinese to Tibet for the same reason. They want to dilute the population of Tibetans. In the 17th century, the British government paid Protestant settlers to move to Ireland. Purpose, of course, to cement English control over the area. When Muslim Turkey controlled southern Europe, these population transfers became the norm. Muslims were often forced to move to Constantinople so as to make it an Islamic city. Sultan Murad II did the same in Salonika. It was a major port city. That was Greek, of course. To cement his control over it, he needed to make sure that he brought Muslim immigrants into the area. During the Renaissance, the Turkish Empire forced Muslims to populate Cyprus. There's just a handful of examples where immigration has been used by a ruling class for the sake of cementing their control over something. But today, this is the first time in human history where the ruling class has done it to itself. It remains a fact that whites and only whites are forced to accept mass immigration and face legal sanctions if they do not. The result of this, the sheer size, the millions, 5 million since 08, into Europe and now the USA. They're creating conditions where racially mixed marriages become an issue of genocide and racial replacement. But for the sake of it being a sin, it would have to be a member of these groups. And I believe that we may have well reached that point. But in and of itself, it's not a theological issue. The scriptures are absolutely clear on this. In the book of Exodus, we read this. Moses is warning the Israelites here. Then you'll accept their daughters who sacrifice to other gods. They'll be wives for your sons. Then they'll seduce your sons to commit adultery against me by worshiping other gods. In other words, by bringing in another race of people with different customs, they're going to destroy what you have here, and this is forbidden. God says to Joshua here, in the context of his military victory over the Canaanites, he says, for if you ever go back and cling to the rest of these nations, these which remain among you and intermarry with them, so that you associate with them and they with you, know with certainty that the Lord will not continue to drive these nations out from before you. They'll be a snare and a trap to you, a whip on your sides and thorns in your eyes until you perish from off this good land which the Lord has given you. There is no question here. This is a racial and ethnic warning from God. These foreigners cannot be a part of Israel. The church cannot accept any dilution of itself. This is not just a religious matter. It is a racial matter. God speaking to Joshua is referring to their customs and genetic background. He's referring to conquered nations as ethnic units. These nations have bad genes, God says. He created them. They have bad habits. They have bad customs that can't exist alongside church. It has nothing to do with doctrine. In the book of Numbers, chapter 33, if you don't drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then it shall come about that those who you let remain will become as pricks in your eyes and thorns in your sides. And they'll trouble you in the land where you live. Almost identical between Exodus and Numbers. If you bring in these foreigners, if you live among them, they will eventually destroy you. Exodus, Moses says in Exodus, watch yourself that you make no covenant with the inhabitants of the land into which you're going. It will become a snare to your midst, but rather you're to tear down their altars and smash their sacred pillars and cut everything about them, their hill altars. That means we're talking about not the religious custom, but the fact that you can't even make a contract with them. They're incapable of keeping faithful to a contract. Well, for the third worlders in America, in Europe, the black man in America as well, he is raised to believe that the white owes him money and favors. That won't come out in one of their fake marriages. Of course, the children are brought up black. I have never heard of a racially mixed children identifying as white. It doesn't happen because there's far more benefits to being black in America than white. I know of no exceptions to this. Solomon died a heretic for this very same reason. Because he brought foreigners, non-Israelites, of different race and different customs, they eventually seduced him into paganism. It's not just about their religious observance, it's about the nature of who they are as people. This was the abomination of desolation. Any of these mixing, they don't make a distinction between race and religion. It is racial, of course it is, because they're talking about customs, they're talking about their moral background. Book of Jubilees says, if there's any man in Israel who desires to give his daughter or his sister to any man who is not of the seed of the Gentile, who is of the seed of the Gentiles, he will die. He has committed a sin and a shame in Israel. And to this law there is no limit of days, no ceasing, and no forgiveness. But he shall be rooted out who defiles his daughter among all Israel, because he has given his seed to Moloch. Now, Jubilees is not part of Scripture, but that's a meaningless statement. St. Justin Martyr accepted it as true. Epiphanius, Origen, Diodorus, Isidore of Alexandria, Isidore of Seville, Eutyches of Alexandria. Many of the early church fathers cited it as Scripture. It needn't be in the Bible to be Scripture, of course. And it certainly shows what the early church was thinking about these things. They're talking about the seed of the Gentiles. They're not talking about religion here, they're talking about race. Even in Psalm 106, they did not destroy the peoples as the Lord had commanded them, but they mingled with the nations and adopted their customs. They worshiped their idols. They sacrificed their sons to false gods. They shed innocent blood. Blood of their sons and daughters whom they sacrificed to the idols of Canaan, and the land was desecrated by their blood. In the Old Testament, land, blood, and soil are absolutely one and the same. Religious practice is an aspect of this, but is not the whole thing. These people don't just differ in terms of religion. That's the result of their sickness. They refer to customs, they're talking about the very life of a nation, them as people. It's far more than just religion. By leaving the Israelite nation and mixing outside of it, they fell to darkness. And it implies also that sexual allure led to their downfall, to Solomon. The nations, that is, those out of the church and those out of the land where they dwell, such as the Greeks in Greece, Russians in Russians, once immigrants move in, they adopt their ways. Because these people do not have the law, they don't have grace to guide them. They adopted the ways of their ruling class and took it as natural. In fact, most translations will actually use words like intermarried, although the more modern ones won't. When Esau married a Hittite, for example, his parents were outraged. Genesis 28 says that the Israelite was not to marry a woman from Canaan. It's a blanket condemnation. It's not connected to their religious practices at all. They're just evil people. It doesn't work. Abraham will command later on. He has to only find a wife among his kindred. He says the same thing to Isaac. Of course, the famous Deuteronomy 32 teaches that God created and separated the nations and races. There is no reference to religion here at all. It says, when the Most High divided the nations, their inheritance, he separated the sons of Adam. He set the borders of the people according to the number of the children of Israel. So there's really no different translation for this. It's one and the same. The Hebrew word mamzer refers to a bastard. A bastard is someone of mixed lineage. The word adultery, it's not an accident that the word adultery comes from adulterate. To commit adultery, among other things, is to mix that which shouldn't be mixed. An adulterous, there are such things as adulterous marriages. Well, how could a marriage be adulterous? Well, if it's improperly mixed. The patristic Greek lexicon, G.W.H. Lamb, he actually refers to the church fathers in their dealing with the word adultery, whether in Greek or in Latin. It's based on racially mixing, racial or ethnic mixing, as well as religion. The word in Leverett's lexicon means begotten basely, not thoroughbred, not full-blooded, adulterated. This is the Hebrew word mamzer. Adulterinous, mogitius in Greek, a mongrel. This is also what we refer to in the Sixth Commandment, adultery, to adulterate. The condemnation of mixing race and religion. Because they're talking about breeding, a Latin adultero, is always defined as moving to a lower state of being through breeding with others. They're referring to seeds here. The Oxford Dictionary of Latin defines adulteratus as mixed, adulterated, produced by crossbreeding of mixed descent or origin. Sometimes they use it for foreign. Leverett says, not thoroughbred, not full-blooded. So the avoidance of racial or ethnic mixing is not just about religious observance, since that separation really didn't exist anyway. It refers to genetic crossbreeding among nations, which is itself condemned. Sexual desire leading to cheating on one's wife is a result of adultery, not adultery itself. There is no place in the ancient world, and certainly the church, that sees this mixing as a good thing. I love it when these idiots try to say that Moses married an Ethiopian, someone from Cush, which more or less, as if the racial makeup of these areas was the same 4,000 years ago as it is now. The Ethiopians are a Semitic people, and the Cushites. They're not black in the sense of black African. And the ruling class spoke Greek. The Orthodox, those who converted Ethiopia in the early, in the end of the classical era, spoke Greek, and the ruling class there spoke Greek. If you look at the portraits of the early monarchs of Ethiopia, they're white. However, if you look at more recent textbooks, they deliberately darken the faces. I'm seeing this all over the place. I'm seeing this when it comes to Abyssinia. They are darkening the faces of the initial portraits, which clearly show them as white or something very close to white people. So that's a meaningless concept. God doesn't love everyone. First of all, the concept of everyone didn't exist. There was no quantitative notion of all beings in one class. No. First of all, the fact that someone walks on two legs doesn't make them human. That is an article of faith, not of truth. A human being is someone who can rationally go through life, because rationality and freedom are one and the same. It's hard. It requires discipline. You're not human if you can't do that. You're an animal. I don't care if you look human. I don't care if you walk on two legs. That means nothing. Those are simply external physical factors. Many of these people live as animals. Now, I'm not talking about a whole group of people, but it seems to be that those whose IQs are in the 40s and 50s and 60s qualify as animals. They can't reason. But Western civilization and Christian civilization, Aristotle says this is a definition of what a human being is. Someone who can act freely, which is identical with rationality. Not to do whatever you want. That's, you know, my cat does whatever it wants. It doesn't mean it's free. No, to be free, you have to reason. That is hard. It takes discipline. Most people can't do it. The word human is being debased by having it attached to anything that walks on two legs. And that is garbage. There is no scientific reason to believe that. There is no religious reason to believe that. A human being is someone who can reason. Someone who can reason freely. Someone who can abstract from their self-interest, from their impulses, from their desires. Increasingly, that's more and more difficult. If you are unable to do that, then you can't function as a human being. It's that simple. God cursed people. God slaughtered people, people that he himself created. That meant that these people only existed for the sake of a negative example, to teach the church, the people of Israel, something, good, bad, or indifferent. There is no concept of all or every. That is purely a quantitative idea that exists only in the mentally lazy modern world. Use a word like world, really the Greek cosmos. It means a national order, the cosmion. It doesn't mean everything. To go into the world is to go into a specific nation. The world refers to an order. Eric Vogelin has quite a bit of literature on that. Matthew 10, Jesus says, go not to the way of the Gentiles and into any of the city of the Samaritans. Don't go there, but rather only the lost sheep of Israel. And as you go, preach, saying, the kingdom of God is at hand. There were specific peoples that Christ was sent to save. John 17, 9. I pray for them. I pray not for the world, but for them whom thou hast given me, because they are thine. He's excluding people. He's probably excluding the overwhelming majority of people. He's excluding the Canaanites, those in Sodom, the goats, the Pharisees, untold millions he has excluded, and they will be destroyed. A human being is not someone who appears to walk on two legs. That's a stupid definition. Someone who might happen to look like you, but otherwise doesn't act like you. A human being is a free, rational being. Israel is a set of ethnic groups, a race set apart. Christianity is not for everyone. Christianity wasn't for the entire world. Christ could not have been more clear about that. Concept like every doesn't refer to every member of a class. If I say that all men have two legs, I'm not saying that every single individual man has two legs. The fact that I can't, that doesn't penetrate people, shocks me. There are two different concepts. Nominalism says, well, it just means that every single being has two legs. No, it says a class of beings have two legs. This is the concept when Christ is referring to all and every. Every man who's come into the world. It doesn't mean every single being born to the world. Or what you think a man is. It doesn't mean everybody. There was no concept of everybody in the ancient world. That's ridiculous. It's a result of mental laziness. Christ came for the church. It's the only thing he cares about. Not for everyone. The word everyone is such a ridiculous concept. You couldn't possibly have anything but just some romantic feeling. There is no such entity. Everyone but me, in their mind. Quite frankly, I don't think that any decent white person in this country can find a mate of his own tribe. To be honest with you, I'm absolutely convinced that interracial dating, especially black and white, is to prove to the whole world how open-minded you are. The white partner is, that is. It's the ultimate virtue signal. We have all heard women, I've heard it several times, I can't turn a black man down for a date because that means I'm racist. The woman is essentially raped. to have a non-white partner is a guarantee against attacks of racism, and even permits the white person to use it. How wonderful that would be to claim racism as a white person. Now, I've known only a handful of interracial marriages, one very close to me. But those I know, every last one, they're loaded with feelings of this kind of emotional cultural supremacy, in the sense that now I'm immune from criticism. See how forward-minded I am. That's why it exists. But Christians somehow believe that racism, a term that has no referent, this is a sin. Sexism, these are great evil sins of our day. But if the race is threatened, destroying a race is certainly far worse than killing a person. Destroying a family is far worse than killing a person. But they have no difficulty with that. Now, because these concepts were completely taken for granted in the ancient world, in the Christian world up until the 19th century, completely taken for granted. They didn't have to be argued for, like homosexuality. Every society killed homosexuals, including the ancient Greek, contrary to myth. Homosexuals were killed, and they were so repulsive. The few that actually would admit it, you could tell. Thomas Jefferson, the most liberal of the American founding fathers, said they should be drawn and quartered, right in his nose in Virginia. Drawn and quartered. No society ever talked about racial mixing before. No society tried to destroy itself racially. It was taken for granted that families, nations, and races were one and the same, and that these are the foundation for any kind of social organization. Only in the 20th century has capitalism demanded that all form of corporate identity be annihilated. It may be white today, but it will be black tomorrow. Of course, the Jewish will always remain firm, inbred, and fanatically ethnocentric. The last one I'll mention here, my favorite book of the Bible, the book of Tobit, because my patron is Raphael, of course. And no one reads this, and I think it should be read. And it's part of the Old Testament, since the ancient church had it in its Old Testament. Martin Luther removed it. We read this. This is the elder Tobias is talking to his son. And he says, "Beware of all whoredom, my son. Chiefly take a wife of the seed of thy fathers. Take not a strange woman to wife, which is not of thy father's tribe. For we are the children of the prophets, Noah, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. Remember, my son, that our fathers from the beginning, even they're all married wives of their own kindred, their own people, and were blessed with children. And their seed shall inherit the land. Now therefore, my son, love thy brethren. Despise not in thy heart thy brethren, the sons and daughters of thy people, in not taking a wife of them." Tobit, chapter 4, verse 12 and 13. That, of course, in the book of Ezra, you have direct national socialism. You have direct ethnocentrism, what the regime would call racism, which I'm quite proud of. He says, taking a non-Israelite woman is identical to whoredom. That's what it is. It's tribal membership that matters here, not religion. The reason that the tribe exists at all is that they marry. He's arguing the reason we're still here is that we married women of our own kind. The only reason that this kind of racial nationalism comes up in the Old Testament is because the Israelites were such a small group of people, surrounded by powerful empires of Babylon or Assyria or Egypt. This is not just a command here you have in the Old Testament and still binding on us today. But Tobit is giving advice to Tobias on his deathbed. This is a sacred utterance. That's why it's being recorded. The deathbed speech here, this is meant to be dogma. That's why it's recorded. Now, modern translations have deliberately distorted this passage. The Good News Translation, for example, says, they actually write this. They have him say, "Do not marry anyone who is not related to us." This is utter blasphemy. It's a deliberate manipulation of the text to support the leftist agenda. All Catholic Bibles have this passage. with the exception of the 1899 edition of the Devarim. Don't marry anyone who's not our relative? That's what they're trying to say. Saying something so stupid, acting like they're all inbred for the sake of the leftist agenda. He doesn't say that. He talks about his own race. He says so explicitly. And everyone understood that, and everyone accepted that until the 1950s. In modern America, white women have a practical reason to avoid black men, and it's violence. Black men seek out white women as a trophy. It's because women are a booty. That's the benefit of any conquering army since Babylon. Once the enemy is defeated, the women become fair game. That's why black men seek after white women. It's to declare victory and to humiliate the white men. I mean, the black male is raised to hate white people. That they're the cause of all problems, that they're not to be trusted. They're slave drivers. So how could they marry a white woman? How would this contempt not spill over into dating a white woman? It isn't love. But the proof here is that those couples have a 200% higher divorce rate than normal couples. The Burnett study of 2005 showed that black males are 8 times more likely to beat their white wife than a black one. Furthermore, the white women who are listening here, in 2006, the percentage of new HIV cases was 83.7% black, as opposed to just 11% white. Yet, because they're afraid of being called racist, white women are pressured into playing Russian roulette. 1989, the Mercy Study, in the American Journal of Public Health, the white wife is murdered by her black husband at a rate 12 times that of normal couples. It's because you have this inbred hatred of whites. I mean, I could cite dozens of other studies on the same thing. And they're saying it in an academic environment. We're saying this outright without the weasel words can cause employment termination. So you know the numbers are far higher than that. 7.7 times more likely to beat their white wife. It's probably 20 times. There's only so far they can go in academia. This is why scriptures say what they do. This is why the Old Testament in modern parlance would be racist. Of course it is. That's common sense. Hatred comes exclusively from the left and from the regime. The left is the group that's arguing for our death, killing cops. Black nationalists talking about the killing of white people on a daily basis. Jewish record companies are promoting the slaughter of whites in gangster rap from the 90s to today. That's not considered hate. Talking about hate is a way to distract from these problems, these statistics, the truth. They have you on the defensive automatically with this stupid word. It's ridiculous. The point is to avoid the fact that their hands are bloody. Because anyone who is actively supporting this kind of thing does share in the slaughter that results from it. A white girl, her freshman year in college, approached by a predatory black male, will likely be beaten and possibly even get HIV because she's scared to death and brainwashed that they're far superior to any other being. We see what happens in South Africa. It dropped out of the news once blacks took over. Actually, it was the administration after de Klerk was almost exclusively Jewish. It's the cabinet in South Africa, but blacks were used as muscle, as always. The slaughter of whites, the beating of whites, the complete destruction of the economy, the out-of-control crime, exclusion zones, no-go zones like you have in Sweden, you now have them in Detroit, in America. This is a direct result of these policies of the left, what Antifa is fighting for. This is governments, the capitalist system, liberalism, neoconservatism, most conservatives. This is a system that they defend. They don't want to hear these facts. They'll scream, they'll yell, they'll threaten, they'll try to kill you. These hysterical responses are the result of this this horrible feeling of guilt that they have. They know that this is true. They know that the black girl goes out with the black guys, taking her life in her hands, in many cases. But they don't care. They have to support it. And if she dies, she dies. You've seen the signs. I've seen them in England and elsewhere. We'll trade rapists for racists, or the other way around. We'll trade racists for rapists. They're coming out and saying that rape is okay. Being raped is okay if the person is non-white because you deserve it. All of a sudden, the feminists are nowhere to be found for these victims. It's not being reported by the press. They're lying about who did it. The German Die Welt newspaper was challenging the Justice Department in Germany precisely on this issue. They were told, you do not arrest these people, you do not deport these people, and you certainly don't talk about their race. And the police departments in urban areas in Western Europe are falling apart for this reason. But that's the point. Black males before do about 6% of the rapes in America. But the anti-white bias in some of these things, I mean, whites and Hispanics are considered the same people. And many Hispanics are actually blacks or Afro-Cuban. The Justice Department couldn't be any more manipulative there, but at least they say 60% is in black hands. Blacks are 12% of the population. Again, these unions are not sinful in themselves. They become sinful when this agenda is attached to it, when this is the purpose of it. As the slaughter continues, it will become increasingly sinful to engage in this. And if you know someone who's involved in this, you have to explain to them the facts. It is predatory. And I tell you, the black female is right on my side about this. You talk about mixed races, the mixing of the races in America, you're talking about black male dominating the white woman. Black male having used the state and Antifa and capitalism to humiliate the white male now takes over. Very few black men kill themselves because their self-esteem is so artificially inflated. These are the kind of the reasons why. But the ancient church, the Orthodox Church, rejects all of this. This is Babylon. It's proof of the end times. When you have politicians, who know that in bringing these migrants into Europe, there's a chance that their family, their own sons and daughters, may be killed or raped, but they do it anyway. That is the kind of power and coercion that is far more than just physical or monetary. The regime in the U.S. refuses to close the border between Mexico and the U.S., knowing that gang violence is almost the exclusive cause of violent crime in Southern California. It doesn't matter. They know that they're condemning people to death in refusing to close the border, and therefore they share in those deaths. They're responsible for them. And they disarm the police, which they're doing. And they tie their hands behind their backs. And they claim that there's a war on drugs, but every soldier in this drug war gets a lawyer. I don't remember seeing that in German soldiers in World War II getting a lawyer. Or Japanese infantrymen in Okinawa each had a lawyer and had to have a trial before they get shot. I don't recall that. This is not a war. The U.S. government, as everyone knows, the evidence is overwhelming, supports and arms the drug cartels in Latin America. Just those who are willing to play ball, like the Sinaloa. Then they destroy their rivals, and now you have a massive monopoly, far stronger than DEA or local government. The church will reject the concept that race mixing in and of itself is a sin. That is true. It is not. However, in our current context, given the nature of the predatory nature of non-white males, the instances of violence, HIV, those particular things if we know that to be true, to allow that to happen is in fact sinful. European leaders, American leaders are knowingly destroying themselves. When Michael Eisner's son was killed by a black gangster. This is a man who promoted and invented gangster rap for Warner Brothers. It didn't stop him. His own son was killed. He didn't care. That's the kind of power that can only be considered demonic. Anybody supporting this, whether they like it or not, anyone who's against racism and all this kind of crap, you do share in this crime. I don't care how fashionable it makes you feel. I don't care that you feel like you're a part of some moral crusade that has absolutely no cost. But a moral crusade that gets you nothing but pats on the back is not a moral crusade. You're a mindless conformist. You're an automaton. Anyway, I run out of my time. I appreciate you guys. Remember my prediction. Pretty soon you will see the Old Testament pulled from the Bible for these very reasons. The New Testament doesn't mention much in these matters because the Old Testament already took care of it. That was the context. Why repeat it? You're going to start seeing churchmen go insane trying to justify these policies. They don't seem racist. It happened to me, the Autonomous Metropolitan. They'll say anything, do anything, be anything. I appreciate you listening. I thank my friends. I thank my enemies, most of them. And also, as always, Sven Longshanks for doing these things for free. I really appreciate it. I know it's a lot of work, and I'm always late on these things, and I apologize to him for that. Matt Parrott and Matthew Heinbeck, who some years ago light the fire under me, get me back broadcasting again. A public thanks to you. I know I've done that before, but I'm doing it again. Thank you. And I'll talk to you guys next time. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Orthodox Nationalist with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson at RadioArian.com.